Hello, this is Brian Scuttle here.
Ronnie Haynes.
Dave Mask.
This is Yahoo's with Microphone. We're here to talk about Serenity, Joss Whedon's writing and directing feature debut. And before we start, Ron, I've got a question for you.
Yes, Brian.
Is there anything that I can say in the next 120 minutes that could possibly convince you that my love for this movie is anything other than just simple Joss Whedon fanaticism?
I mean,
let me ask that for you now.
Okay, I think that's probably as good an answer as I'm gonna get.
I have my own affections for this movie, as does Dave. But you know, Dave and I both still do have our our queries with this, do we not?
Yeah.
Well put, Dave.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What we've got here is the prologue.
I mean,
universe.
One of the best parts of the movie right here was the exposition. We were all in absolute agreement of that walking out of the movie the first time we saw it.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was the preview screening done specifically for the fans of Firefly.
Correct. The last set of screenings actually on June 23rd. They had three sets, one in early May, one in late May, one late June, and they added screens every time and sold out single time.
Mm-hmm. And might I say that the energy in that room was just unmatchable.
It was absolutely incredible. I rarely had that type of experience in theater before. I've had it, but it's few and far between.
Like the midnight screening of Return of the King came close.
Yeah.
But,
right.
but this was just, I mean, I still hold it as my most favorite movie going experience ever.
Oh yeah,
despite my problems with the movie as a whole, this was just extraordinarily special to like see it with not only you guys, months before it was originally meant to be released, but to see it with a room full of hardcore fans of the TV show, which I mean, that was just so special.
Oh yeah, I mean it was sensational and. But we can talk about more about that later, but right now let's talk about the prologue, which I think is one of the best examples of such a sequence in movie history. I mean, in my review, I compared it to Fellowship of the Ring, I compared it to JFK, I compared it to the newsreel in Citizen Kane, which basically tells you the story before you even see the story unfold. Right now we have River, played by Summer Glau, and
Simon played by
Sean Marr.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor here is played by Michael Hitchcock, who is actually a regular in Christopher Guest movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really shocked to see him in here, quite frankly.
Yeah. When I first saw him, I thought I recognized him. I was like, wow, he's in this movie?
Yeah. And he's quite good in what brief role he has in this movie.
Well, from what I've heard of the Joss Whedon commentary is that he actually prefers to cast comedians in dramatic roles because apparently, it's obvious that comedy is the hard part, and if they can do that. And this is essentially a flashback in a flashback in a flashback.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the aspects that makes this sequence so special.
Well, one of the things that really struck me when I first started reading about the movie on the internet was one of the people who, I guess they got hold of one of the early scripts, and they said it took place both before the show and after the show. The show we're referring to, obviously, is Firefly.
Did anyone notice in the early screen? I remember not being there, like the second time we saw it, like after it was released officially. But in the early screen for the fans, there was like a direct Star Wars reference in that one little moment where those two doctors are walking by, while River's up on the ceiling. I heard one of them say, "Did you see those new BT-16s or whatever that line is from A New Hope?" Nobody ever noticed. That was in the early screening.
Really?
And then it was not in the official release, which I could have sworn. I mean, I know it sounds a little, but I could have sworn I heard that, like, at least in the early screen. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you obviously in the early screen, we weren't watching the completely finished product. I mean, we were, you know, some of the effects were still rough at temp score.
Mm-hmm.
Place score. Oh, yeah, I mean, that's just a great visual, right?
Well, this is just a great introduction.
Yeah, this is a brilliant idea, right?
The operative.
Yeah,
this is just fantastic.
And Joss Whedon actually talks about it in one of the commentaries for the one of the deleted scenes with the operative. He talks about how that was not, there was a little more to that introduction that we didn't see.
But this is just pitch perfect.
Right? Oh no, it's pitch perfect. And I'm not going to try to pronounce the actor who plays the operative's name out of respect for him because I don't want to get it wrong.
They actually go over this.
But I will say he was in Amistad for Spielberg. He was in Dirty Pretty Things with Audrey Tautou, and he was actually in Woody Allen's Melinda and Melinda, which I saw before this movie. And he's playing a completely different character, but he's playing him every bit as charismatically as he plays the operative. And
isn't he in a new movie that's coming out?
Oh my god, I think I have seen his name in something, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I just saw a trailer for it the other day. It's in a movie with Denzel Washington.
Oh,
Denzel
The Inside Man?
Yeah, is that him?
I don't remember seeing him in that trailer. I could have been wrong, but...
Can I ask a question here?
Yes.
I couldn't help, but the entire... Both times I saw this in the theaters with you guys, we saw it in the early screen of the fans, then we saw it on opening night with, you know, a regular audience. And both times, all throughout the exposition, I couldn't help but ask myself, what is, you know, average Joe moviegoer thinking at this moment? And I'm like, you know, are they as captivated as I am? Given that I am a pretty much a hardcore fan of the show, you know, or are they as confused as I don't mean to give, you know, average Joe moviegoer, you know, I don't mean to give them I don't mean to, you know, discredit them.
But it was just
I could not help but like ask myself this every moment, you know, of watching this, like what are they thinking?
I mean, yeah. I think we were all asking. I know I was asking myself that, you know, at different points in the movie, you know, parts that I know were just like Firefly-esque moments or, you know, central moments, like, you know, does this even carry the weight for like a regular viewer that I know it carries for me? You know, are they following the same path that I'm following?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, sometimes yes, sometimes probably not. You know, they could have been getting sort of a totally different interpretation of what things are happening.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they were down with some of the mystery and some of the coolness of this moment.
Yeah.
But
this entire opening, you know, all the stuff, you know, from the exposition to what the Federation planets are, and, you know, all up to the, you know, this introduction of the operative, you know, I'm certain that, you know, like, the average moviegoer is, you know, pretty held up, pretty caught up in, you know, the coolness of, you know,
yeah,
the cool factor, but, I mean, besides that, Brian,
I mean, you're basically asking if you think they get, like, the dramatic weight of it. I mean, you know, you think that, yes, they would be down with the coolness aspect of it, and I think so, too. I mean, the dramatic weight...
Yeah, that's...
Probably...
Sometimes yes, sometimes no, probably.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, if you're talking about this section, you know, they may... Once you start to get to know the crew during the movie, like River and Simon, you see how those two interact. Mal and the rest of the crew, and how those guys, Mal and Kaylee, and the way they act with Simon and River. I mean, once you get into the rest of the story, I think then you might start to realize the weight of this introduction. But...
That's the thing. By that point, you're already past the introduction, and you're not.
Yeah.
Now, see, that was a bit of a Firefly moment right there.
Yeah.
That we just saw, I think. And you know, it's, some people have issues with the movie because they say it feels kind of like a TV show in some aspects. Which I think they're kind of. I mean, this is a TV show writer, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know,
But Joss Whedon's writing has always been very cinematic.
Right. Yes. Right. Right. So yeah, I go back and forth on that. But you know, I think even if you know it's somewhat like a TV show, I think that adds just a bit of an element that you know we're kind of missing today. You know, with sort of mm-hmm. the formulaic things that are happening. You know, so I'm down.
What was that? For the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Reference to the pilot episode.
Also titled Serenity.
Yes.
And, you know, how
we
often...
We just heard a great bit of music at the sequence.
Actually, that... Don't get me started on this.
That music is genius, actually.
Yeah.
As well as that's the fantastic. As well as the music for the introduction, which is quite good itself.
Mm-hmm.
But
without question, my favorite score from this year. I know that, like, you know...
It's certainly, for me, I know it's definitely one of the highlights from what I consider otherwise... I always like that line. I don't want to explode. It's certainly one of the highlights for me in an otherwise mm-hmm. pretty disappointing year for film scores, actually.
Yeah, and sadly, one of the ones that is going to be... isn't even going to be considered for any awards.
Yeah.
Which is...
When you consider the best original score Oscar, the originality, the original aspect of that does not really come into play.
Right.
Not always.
And this is why, I mean, I'm glad. I know you weren't as happy with the music, you know, separate from the movie as Brian and I were, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
When you bought it, you said you bought it,
mm-hmm.
and you gave it a, you know, proper listen to. But mm-hmm. I'm glad you have that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
that... Yeah, but this, yeah, but, and...
Here we've got just a really brilliant, like, sort of...
Wonder,
but it was actually done in two takes.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually, it's actually two takes.
Yeah, like, that's discussed in the commentary
yeah,
as well,
right.
So...
I actually saw that online.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's, but it is edited together really well.
Yeah.
And, okay, now, one of the things I did want to get into is... How often do we see, you know, I mean, I love each and every one of these characters, but how often do we see them have moments that define their character as much as you would have liked to have seen that in, you know, a major motion picture? I mean, I'm going to point them out because I'm going to, like, say, oh, you know, that's a great moment for so-and-so, that's a great... But, you know, the only reason I'm going to be doing that is because they are so very few and far between in this... You know, I guess I should say in the screenplay that, I mean, that's one of the things I was ultimately disappointed
yeah,
by.
Right.
You know, just like, this is River's movie and this is Mal's movie.
Yeah.
This is River's story and this is Mal's story.
Right.
I mean, but it's there, I mean, there, the wealth of characterization that is in this cast. It goes untapped in this movie, I think.
Well, I think that's gonna happen, especially when you see how well it's explored, you know, in the TV show.
Yeah.
Because the only reason why you know that so much potential is there in some cases
is because you just watched 14 episodes,
right.
14 hour long episodes with this crew,
right. So
where you get the opportunity to
right.
explore them a little more.
I was disappointed too when
yeah.
you know we didn't see all that, you know.
But one of the things I was actually going to bring up, and this is a good place to bring it up, is, you know, for me, I sort of look at this as it's sort of like adapting a book into a movie. You're not going to get everything you can possibly get in there. It's just
but
not going to happen.
When I look
but
at
the fact of the matter is for. The transition, given the circumstances, it's a really good transition, and
mm-hmm.
I actually think you do get enough of each character, or most of the characters, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
At least the main crew.
Each character
Serenity,
is given their due.
At least the main character, main crew on Serenity,
yeah.
I think you do get enough to where those characters are defined.
Well, like, you know, like we've discussed before, each character does get its their due,
yeah.
but... It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the dude that I was. All right. I don't know how to word that.
Right. Well, and for me, when it's so obvious that, you know, each character is kind of getting their moment, that does cheapen it.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
But then again, you know, coming from the TV show, I know that's, I kind of expect that's something that's going to happen. You know, just because it doesn't have enough time, and because, you know, the TV show has the character so well developed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt you, Ron. I felt you on that. And I'm with you, but you know, I'm a little more accepting towards, you know.
This is probably my favorite
Ryan's,
cue.
It's really
one of the better cues on here.
Yes, it is.
One of the better examples of the style that Greg Edmondson brought to the show.
Favorite Simon moment.
Yeah.
It's okay to leave him to die. Now, see, that's what I'm saying, though. That is like the only Simon moment. That truly, you know, because, like, besides this, you know, we only really see Simon be very, you know, nurturing to River and everything. And that's a big part of his character as well. But I'm saying, though, besides that, you know, just like...
Well, I mean, that is really the biggest part of his character.
But there's also the awkwardness and the, you know, the kind of, like, you know...
Well, he's getting there now.
Look,
with Kaylee.
Any more awkward than that.
With Kaylee, I mean, you know...
I didn't.
Plus, the fact of the matter is, it's like, keep in mind, these guys have been on the ship
longer
than they were even at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know.
But I'm saying, though, but like, you know, but that one line that, like, so beautifully defines Simon's character, you know, it's okay to leave them to die, which was just the most, and like, I didn't get enough of that with any of the characters.
Right.
And there are a couple characters. Including, you know, Zoe was one of them that I did not feel she got one of those moments.
I think Zoe probably got gypped more than anybody.
Well, there is Inara.
We'll talk about that later. As far as the main crew that's on the ship now, Zoe probably got the worst.
But I'm saying, though, there's
of the fact that you do get a sense of her relationship to her husband, who has watched the pilot. Mm-hmm.
She's still hot.
But I'm saying, thank you, Dave. There's a part coming up here with Zoe that pretty much is like the only moment she gets, and then there's a moment right after that that is meant to be a Zoe moment, but doesn't.
Yeah.
And I will point it out. Hopefully, maybe you guys have an idea of what I'm talking about. But and this River's theme, can we touch on that?
Why not? David Newman.
David Newman, thank you. How many composers were attached to this?
There were originally
it was going to be the guy who did the TV show.
The thing is, I never heard that.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that somewhere. I never heard that.
Okay.
I'm still looking for
the soundtrack.
The only person I ever knew was attached to the movie, other than David Newman, was Carter Burwell,
mm-hmm.
who is the Coen Brothers' longtime
mm-hmm.
composer and working. Listening to some of his music recently, we've done a sensational job mm-hmm. with this music.
Okay, this is the Zoe moment I was talking about, and I'm like, you know, okay, this is a great Zoe moment, and then there's going to be one coming up in a minute with her and Mal opening the safe, and she's going to say something that was meant to be funny, but it really did, right here, I kind of was bothered by this line, because it was so blatantly meant to be, you know, something that was, you know, supposed to, you know, get a laugh that I wasn't.
Yeah, well,
feel me, Dave.
Somewhat. I mean, you know, that's right there is congruent, I think, with the TV show. You know. Where
no, that's the thing. That line would have been pretty hysterical on television.
Right.
But in the context of, and I apologize for cutting you off, Brian. Please.
We've been cutting each other off for a while.
But Ron, I mean, you know, that may have been for, you know, the movie making that one just a little bit too obvious in order to get the laugh, you know, trying just a little too hard.
Yeah.
Maybe on her part, maybe on the part of the writing. I mean, you know, either one. But you know, at least I think that moment was certainly congruent. But yeah, I mean, that might have been a little bit out of place with this presentation.
First look at the Reavers that we've ever gotten.
Never saw
them in the movie, show.
I'm glad.
I'm happy with.
There were some people who were, I know, said, well, you know, it's like for people who basically went insane on the outskirts of Earth, of the galaxy, they sure are organized when you, when given the opportunity. Like, you know, they've got the grappling hooks. It's like, it's clearly, you know, they're clearly know what they're up to and stuff like that. But
Right. Yeah, no, I'm down with that. You know, so
I never really had an issue with it, but
not that, because I was very taken with how great, how cool they were.
Yeah.
I was pretty happy with the way the Reavers were realized.
Right. Yeah. So, but you know, I mean, that whoever brought that point up, I mean, that, I think that is an excellent point.
Yeah.
You know, they are pretty wild and crazy, but then, you know, they're always so organized.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, also, you know, they're
it's kind of the Klingon factor in a way, isn't it? Like the Klingons.
Kind of, sort of, but I mean, the Klingons weren't. You know. Yeah. I mean, they just got angry really fast. And
yeah.
Now, I like that moment when Mal shot the guy, because, like, I was like, all right, this, I mean, I'm in the hands of a, you know, yes, I'm in the hands of a first-time feature director, but I'm in the hands of a
great storyteller.
Yes.
Right.
Now, what the hell are they shooting at?
I don't know. Sort of land cruiser.
But, no, I'm saying, though, I couldn't help but, like, just, what is the point of trying to shoot these little pistols at this huge thing that, like, I'm sorry.
No. I feel you on that. I thought the same thing. You know,
yeah.
I guess they can do some form of damage, but, I mean, you know, if you're desperate, you're desperate.
Maybe shoot out the engine or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, somehow.
Okay.
I mean, it's a slim chance, I'll admit, but still.
You know, shoot the cockpit. You know,
I'm still really kind of.
I mean, I wasn't completely sold on it either. But
I was not sold on it at all.
But you know, I was willing to go somewhat with.
I unfortunately was not, and that's just one of my first. I mean, you know.
But you have the grenade thing, dude, coming back. Pretty.
I mean,
fun.
Like, that's the thing. The grenades would be the one thing that would probably make a difference.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty. That's pretty gruesome.
They do have a pretty decent making of sort of about this sequence on the DVD. It's pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to getting into the extras because
it's a good shot.
Well, it's Mal.
Yeah.
Oh man, that would
there's some really good visual effects.
Now, when did Wash become the last action hero? Because I'm like, they're just lines that he says in there, and it's kind of like, you know, just Arnold Schwarzenegger-esque, and I really did have some issues with.
Really? I didn't hear too much that was inconsistent.
I was like. We're coming to get you, honey. You know, just like, I mean, just watch it again by yourself and listen to that line.
I mean, there's another line.
He's done something like that at the TV show. I can't remember.
Yeah, but you know, they were in character, though.
Like,
they were in character in War Stories.
But
in
I mean, they're character here too.
I didn't feel that. And there's one coming up.
You just seem to be very cynical about this.
There's one coming up again that I will point out as, like, the ultimate, you know, just cheese ball Arnold Schwarzenegger line that I. But anyway, that's at a later time.
I mean, I thought this was a pretty good opening action sequence.
No, yeah. I did too.
You know, because I mean, we've already seen one kind of sorta, but you know, this is, you know, the big
props,
one.
Props to Zoic, the visual effects house, who is in charge of the effects.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
That was one of the true, genuine laughs right there when Rivers line. That was, and one of the best. This right here, this moment, I love that moment just because it's such a good, you know, it's such a good laugh scare.
Yeah.
And it's such a good example of what this movie, the mission statement of this movie.
Right.
You know.
Which is basically.
That's,
you know,
a great Wash moment.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's
a perfect Wash moment right there. But anyway, I'm sorry I can't convince you guys. I mean,
You know, this for me was a little out of place because we already had a couple of beatdowns between the two before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I didn't have a problem with it just because
I didn't have a problem with it either.
Because you know, I was thinking in terms of average Joe moviegoer. I was
Also, you're talking about the fact that I mean he has been assured by Mal.
Right.
That his sister is going to be all
right. Right.
And here they are just having to outrun Reavers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would slug Mal too.
Right. No. I hear you. It's just you know when I've seen the history in all the episodes,
yeah.
You know, and everything they're going through. I mean, you know, Mal's already put everybody into danger multiple times.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I mean, I was down.
I mean, even Simon's done that to himself.
Right, too. Right. So but, I mean, I was down. I basically rolled, but you know, it just seemed like a bit over the top for me. That one scene right there.
I don't know. I mean, I never really had an issue with it. I mean, I see where you're coming from, though, Dave. This is the other, I assume this is the other moment between Zoe and Mal that you're talking about?
No, that was the money moment, right?
Oh, wait,
that was the same moment.
But here, I mean,
this is another one of the
you really see
main
their,
relationships.
Yeah, and this I is mean, another you one really of the, see their
right.
relationship. You know, you establish the fact that they were in the war together. You establish the fact that she answers to him too. I mean, you know, if that wasn't necessarily clear earlier, which it kind of isn't.
Right.
But
what does her ab workout look like? I mean, her abs are big.
It's Gina Torres, by the way, who is married to Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh.
He plays,
bastard.
Yeah.
He plays Vixen.
Had bit role in...
I did not know that.
Matrix Reloaded.
Did
actually.
She?
Yeah.
She's married to Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah,
wow, I didn't know that.
She's also been on Alias, too.
And Angel.
Oh, yeah.
And Angel. Let's not get me started on that little...
Oh, let's
what was her character's name on
Jasmine.
Angel? Jasmine. Good lord.
That
was the best season of Angel ever until she showed up. I'm sorry. I mean, that was the best. Huh?
Did they show her naked?
No.
No.
But they do show her in a lot of tight dresses.
Sweet.
I'm gonna see that. This is probably the best exposition of the movie.
It is.
I think.
It's some of the best as far as the Reavers, talking about where the Reavers came from.
It's just when they showed when I was hearing the exposition here, I was just like, wow, this is really good exposition happening across the board.
Yeah.
You know, but this is the moment that made me say that to
myself. But
and it also really does set up Jane's character too,
in the sense
that you know you sort of get his personality right here.
But do you get what's special about his personality? No. I don't think you do ever in the movie.
I think for him, his personality is conveyed through multiple moments. You know, there's not one or two defining moments. It's just like here and there. Because I mean, we just saw him have like two or three seconds worth of scenes that many of them that kind of overall would define the Jane character.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? But that's I guess what I was trying to convey earlier is like. We see what it is about these characters, but do we see what's special about them? I don't think you do. I don't think you do with Jane. I don't think you do with a couple of other characters.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know,
like when I'm saying like that moment with Simon at the very beginning. You know, it's okay to leave them. That's what's special about his character.
Right. And I think
but
the movie. I think overall, Jane was toned down just a little bit. You know, in terms of seeing what's special about him, and meant. Not necessarily for comic relief because we don't necessarily.
Well, that's the thing. There are
more of a wash.
There's more than one moment that where Jane is used for comic relief, and I'm not laughing.
Right. So I think his character was turned a bit more towards that direction rather than in the TV show. I mean, you know, we don't get any like Janestown types moments.
No.
Here.
No.
At
no.
all. You know, and that's where we really. Got
I'm gonna go to a crappy planet where I'm the hero.
You're right, and that's where we really got some defining moments for Jane.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, again, we wouldn't have time to have a Janestown moment here. I mean, we just wouldn't have time.
Oh no, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, that's what I was sort of trying to convey earlier, where it's like, you know, sort of like adapting a book to a movie.
Right.
You know, something's going to get lost in the translation.
Right.
You know, you hope that not a lot of it is lost, and I know you feel like a lot of it was lost, mm-hmm. Ron. I personally didn't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that you did get strong, clear indications as to who these characters were, mm-hmm. in there. I don't think it was just necessarily just little moments here, there, and everywhere. I think in the overall mm-hmm. arc of the story, you do get
Just one thing that I disagree with you with, because, okay, I was not a fan of South Park, yet I loved Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of X-Files, yet I loved Fight the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt as if they were just brilliant interpretations, both of the television shows that they were based on.
Yeah.
You know, this is not Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, nor is it Fight the Future. Nor is it, you know, Wrath of Khan, which I was not fans of, but I am enormous fans of those three movies.
I was a huge fan of the Star Trek series, by the way.
Yes.
We established that in Wrath of Khan, which that commentary is still not over.
We also established that we're not track evil, except for Dave, maybe. But
no, I'm like pseudo. I'm not nearly as hardcore as some other guys.
See, the thing is, I mean,
if Kaylee wanted to hook up with me, I'd be bending her over the engine right now.
All right. Wow.
Okay. Next. Kaylee, played by Jules Stay.
Jules Stay.
Hot, by the way.
Hot.
Beautifully played. Beautifully interpreted.
Yes. Fantastically interpreted. I think she's her interpretation of the part. I mean, they're all good actors, but her interpretation of the part is consistently one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She's hot.
Mal, played by Nathan Fillion, by the way.
From my boy.
Two Guys and a Girl, and played the false Private Ryan in Saving Private Ryan, by the way.
Which I was like, I just got such a kick out of that when you pointed that out to me.
Yeah.
Okay, these guys, I really didn't see what was special about them. I was like, there was like, you know, I know they were meant to be, you know, slightly strange, slightly, you know, but I never got that.
When you see some of the level of like the guest characters that are in the TV show,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was expecting a little bit more.
Yes, as was I.
Same
thing with Mr. Universe.
No, we can talk about him later. Yeah. I definitely agree. That's something I do definitely agree with you on there. And I actually do avoid him in my review of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
My print review of the movie. And I avoid these guys. But,
available on SonicCinema.com now. But anyway.
Sonic-Cinema.com.
Dash.
Have you
ever been there?
I've been there a couple times.
Really?
Yeah. You know. Support my boys.
Yeah, you know. And we saw the huge fight scene in the trailer. I honestly didn't know how he was going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if I was quite down with like a Matrix moment happening in my Serenity movie. However, not bad.
No, I think he.
I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit here, but
no, you are. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
That's the thing. Like I got what was. That was the thing. I know that like this whole what subliminal advertising.
Yeah.
You know, just like. I didn't get it the first time, you know, during the preview screening, but I did get it the second time. I did understand what was interesting about it the second time, what made it, you know, unusual and interesting. And like, just who's Joss Whedon mentioned him a number of times in the commentary. Who's the director of photography? Because he did
Jack N. Green, Jack N. Green.
Yes,
was. Eastwood's longtime
he did Unforgiven.
Cinematographer. He did Unforgiven. He did Twister, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. as well.
Twister was fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
That but was about
he,
the only
is,
besides the
is,
yeah.
besides the effects maybe, but
I actually enjoy Twister. But anyway, let's not talk about that right now.
Yeah, but this movie is beautiful.
No, this movie is spectacularly shot. I think it's one of the best shot movies of the year, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not the best. I mean, I see what you're saying about these guys, and as far as like the secondary characters and all mm-hmm. that not being as compelling as they are in the original.
Yeah. Julian and Joss Whedon discussed, you know, talk about how lucky they got with guest stars in the commentary for Serenity the Pilot. And like, you know, I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And the movie, not so much.
Yeah.
And like, Dave, was this one of the parts of the score that you weren't crazy about? Like the techno kind of flavor?
No. It's just, again, it was less of just a, you know, I expected something to really inspire me, and I just wasn't feeling it, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything truly in particular, you know. I mean, because it sounds like some of the just more blander anime scores that I've listened to in a lot of cases.
That's the thing. I love how this type of music just blends as well as it does with like the emotional aspect of the score, and I just think it was done just brilliantly.
Well, especially when you consider River's theme in particular, the piano and
the out of tune piano,
which Joss Whedon talks about in the liner notes for the soundtrack. I actually, like you, Ron, I was quite impressed with this score. It is one of my favorites from this year, if not my favorite. And it really is a breakthrough for David Newman, I think, who up until then has never really
primarily known
me.
For lighthearted comedies.
Yeah, I mean, I really know him, although he did do Death to Smoochie, too, which is decidedly not a lighthearted comedy, but has quite an excellent score to it, soundtrack to it, that David provided. David Newman, we should say, is part of the great Newman composing family. He is a brother to Thomas Newman. Their father was Alfred Newman, who great composer from the 1950s, who actually did the 20th Century Fox theme fanfare. And actually is the all-time record holder for Oscar nominations for a composer with 45.
Okay, just a moment ago with Wash.
Yeah.
Funny line, but belongs on television.
I thought it worked.
See, I thought it worked, but not on a cinematic level. Again, I mean, Dave, you.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's a very funny Wash moment.
Yeah.
And it's very definitive of who he is.
Right.
More definitive than a lot of other moments that are meant to, you know, define that character. But not, you know, Firefly funny, yes. Serenity funny, not so much.
We did actually buy, and I will, one more thing about David Newman really quick. He's cousin to Randy Newman.
Randy Newman. From Pixar. He does.
From Pixar, among other things.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mostly people know him from his work.
My apologies again for cutting you off there.
I'm used to it at this point. I was just wondering if I was still invited to this thing, quite frankly, sometimes. It's like you two seem to be handling it pretty well yourselves. We did actually pass by a really funny Kaylee line when her and Mal are arguing in the club, which is one of the great examples of Joss Whedon and sexual humor. You can watch the movie for yourself to hear it, but it's just really funny.